The following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 4, text number 2. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari. Recorded on January 2nd, 2012, in Point Cook, Australia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Evam parampara praptam.
Evam parampara praptam.
Imam rajarshayo vidu.
Imam rajarshayo vidu.
Sakalene ha mahata.
Sakalene ha mahata.
Yogo nashta param tapa.
Yogo nashta param tapa.
Yogo nashta param tapa. Purport, translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession. And the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken. And therefore, the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives and the unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to reestablish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord Himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore He declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, the present moment, also there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Krishna. This spirit is demonic, because demons do not believe in God but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by the Parampara disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity. But if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Bada Kamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagra Jata Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Dam Sajivam.
Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamsha.
That's a pretty heavy thing for Prabhupada to say, isn't it? It's either a great boon to humanity or it's a waste of time. It's a very big distinction. A great boon or a waste of time. So what distinguishes between the Gita being a great boon and the Gita being a waste of time? You have to have an authorized presentation that doesn't tamper with the meaning. I was one time visiting a professor of religion at a prestigious university in the U.S., Rice University in Houston, Texas. I was sitting in the professor's office. I had Bhagavad Gita as it is with me. He was saying, why another edition? All the Gitas are the same. You see? Why Bhagavad Gita as it is? He was questioning why you're calling it as it is. They're all as it is, you see? He was thinking all the Gitas are the same. So I just said, well, I just pointed at one of the many of the Gitas on his show. I said, give me that Bhagavad Gita. So I opened it up to text 34 in chapter 9. It's a very nice shloka. Manmanamava madbhakto majanjimang namaskaru mamme vaishashi yuktvayevang anmanang matparayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee, offer your homage unto me, worship me. In this way, you become fully absorbed in me and you will come to me. Very nice, really. So, I checked to see the way this other scholar had translated it. And it was almost the same. He said, engage your mind always in thinking of me, offer obeisances and worship me, become my devotee, being completely absorbed in me, certainly you'll become me. Wow. That's quite a difference, isn't it? You'll become me. Come to me or become me. See, that is the Mayavadi conception. That actually you are God already, but you just forgot. So now through a process of meditation or yoga or some kind of austerity you do, you see, according to the Vedic system, then you can become God again, the Supreme Person, the source of all existence. You see? But actually that is an illogical philosophy, because how could you ever forget that you're God? If you are God, how you could ever forget? What power is greater than you that could make you forget? Well, I forgot. That means forgetfulness is God, then you're not God. Forgetfulness is more powerful than you, then for forgetfulness is God. You see? So this Mayavadi idea, I know the philosophy very well, because as a young spiritual seeker, that was the first books I found. It was all these Mayavadi philosophy books. This yogi, that author, everybody was presenting Mayavadi philosophy. One of the first books I read was called The Book. The subtitle was On the Taboo Against Knowing Who You Are. So this book explained, actually you are God. But right now you're just playing hide and go seek with yourself. You've got to come out of hiding and be God again. I tried it for a few days and it felt pretty good. But then it became obvious it was just imagination. You can't. That means everything's under your control. I imagine I was God for a few days. But my little bubble got popped because things didn't go the way I wanted them to go. So the idea that we're God is a ridiculous idea. And that we've forgotten, we just have to remember it. Another absurdity of it is this, that if I'm God, when Swamiji opened, he came to our town and he said, I'm God, you are God, and we are all God, you see. Now, if we're all God, then who's the supreme God? There is no supreme God. In other words, if I say we're all God, it's a roundabout way of presenting atheism. Because God means one without a second. Just like, how many Supreme Courts do you have in Australia? You have 20? 20 Supreme Courts? One. The Supreme Court has to be one. It's the final decision, you see. There are lower courts. But when you get to the Supreme Court, there's always only one Supreme Court. Because if there's two, it's not the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. So in the same way, when we talk about the Supreme Being or God, there can only be one. Can't be two or three or 5 million. So this Bhagavad Gita, the actual Bhagavad Gita spoken by Krishna in the original Sanskrit language, is the greatest boon to the human society. But these commentators who want to present the Mayavadi conception that we are all God, they will come in and play around with the translation and change the meaning. It's like there was a very popular edition of the Gita. I don't know if it's still popular, but Dr. Radhakrishnan's Bhagavad Gita. He was the former president of India. And in his Bhagavad Gita, he wrote that it is, Krishna says, surrender to me in the Bhagavad Gita. It directly says, surrender to me. What did Dr. Radhakrishnan say in his commentary? It is not to Krishna that we should surrender. Can you imagine? Krishna directly says, surrender to me. His commentary is, it's not to Krishna that we should surrender. But the unborn, unmanifest, that is within me, that is within you, and is within everything. So, if you take Bhagavad Gita from one of these sources that distorts the meaning, it tampers with the words of Krishna, then you are not going to get the liberating potency of the Bhagavad Gita. If you take the Bhagavad Gita exactly the same understanding as Krishna presented to Arjuna, then you become liberated soul. So in this Krishna consciousness movement, we are very, very fussy about not changing the meaning, not putting any mental speculation in. Our preachers are not allowed to speculate with some new idea. They simply present what has been presented by the previous acharyas. Now, it is done according to time, place, and audience. It's not that, you know, we speak according to the situation, but the message is always the same. We never change the message. We may give different examples, cite different leelas to illustrate different points. That can be done. But we never change the truths, the philosophical truths of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna clearly says that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aham sarvasya prabhava mataksaram parvartate iti madva bhajante bang buddha bhava samanvita. He says, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. He clearly says it. Very clearly. And Arjuna acknowledges also. Arjuna said, you see, Arjuna was Krishna's friend, so sometimes he would forget about Krishna's supreme position. But when he heard the Bhagavad Gita, he realized this is Krishna's supreme personality of God. In chapter 10, texts 12 and 13, Arjuna very wonderfully states, Padang Brahma, Padang Dhamma, Pavittam Padavam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adirevam Jang Vibhum. very nicely he states in text 12. He says, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, original personality of Godhead, the unborn, the greatest. And then he says, Ahushtang Shaya Sarve, Naradas. He says that all the great sages, Devarshi Narad, Asita, Devalin Vyas, they have confirmed this truth about you, and now you yourself are saying it to me. Ahushtang Rishaya Sarve, Naradas, anyway. Asita Devala Vyasa, Svayam Chaiva Vishime. I got almost the whole shlok. So this is such an important thing to understand Bhagavad Gita exactly as Arjuna understood it. If you derive a different understanding than what Arjuna understood, you have not properly understood the Gita, and you will not get the liberating potency of the Gita. You have to understand exactly as Arjuna understood it. You see, this is why this edition, Bhagavad Gita as it is absolutely essential for the world population. Because this edition clearly gives Bhagavad Gita according to the way that Arjuna understood it on the chariot 5,000 years ago. Very clearly as Arjuna understood it. So, it's been very carefully passed down over the last 5,000 years also. This is called the Siptic Succession. Actually, this knowledge was imparted at the beginning of the universe to Brahmaji. Brahmaji imparted it to Narad Muni, who imparted it to Srila Vyasadeva, who imparted it to Madhvacharya. In this way, it has come down through an unbroken line of succession. So this knowledge, it had been broken for the kings. The kings had lost their connection with it, so Krishna was reconnecting them. But through Brahmaji and Narada and Vyas, the knowledge has never been broken. And Madhvacharya, and then all the acharyas after Madhvacharya in our line. There's a nice list here. If you have the Bhagavad Gita, you can go to page 32. I think they haven't changed the page number. You can go to page 32, yeah. Well, the numbers, they reorganize it sometimes. Now it's on page 30, yeah. There's a whole list of the siblic succession here, you see. Very important thing. To understand, we are keeping alive a tradition. We have not brought out a new edition. We are keeping alive the tradition, exactly as this knowledge was imparted to Arjuna. So the result is that by hearing this knowledge, by following these instructions, you actually get connected with Krishna just as Arjuna did. This is the amazing quality of transcendental sound vibration. Arjuna was very fortunate. He was right there with Krishna on the chariot hearing the Bhagavad Gita. But you know something? You can get the same potency right here, right now that Arjuna got. It's the sound vibrations of the Bhagavad Gita have not lost their power. They are just as powerful now as they were spoken 5,000 years ago, Arjuna. It's simply a matter of your hearing. How much are you tuned in? You see, is your mind looping the loop around the Milky Way? Or are you actually tuned in? You see, are you taking the knowledge? Is it coming in one ear and going out the other ear? Or is it going deep into the heart? You see, if you take this knowledge deep, deep into your heart, as Arjuna took it deep, deep, deep into your heart, simply by hearing Bhagavad Gita, you'll become a liberated soul. You don't have to give up your job. Arjuna didn't give up his job. He's a military man, pretty intense career, you see. He didn't quit his job. He didn't give up his wife. He had a number of wives. He didn't give up his wives or his children or his job. He simply understood the art of how to give everything to Krishna, you see. This is the science of bhakti. Bhakti means you're reconnecting with Krishna, who's actually present at every minute, but we've lost contact with him because we're covered by lust, by anger, by greed, by madness, by illusion, by envy. Actually, God is present with you at every minute, but we don't see him, you see. We become blind to God. Do you know that God is in front of you at every minute? You see? We become blind to God. So by this process of bhakti, especially in this age, as Krishna recommends in chapter 9, text 14, satatam kirtayanto mam, always chanting the glories of the Lord, recommended by Krishna himself. If we will chant regularly the names of God as much as possible, this has a cleansing effect on the consciousness. All those things that are blocking us from being able to perceive Krishna, they become removed, you see. In the beginning, we see Krishna the deity. We understand he's present even in the nice photograph of the deities. He's also present in the photograph. We understand he's present in the sound vibration of his name. And then Krishna explains how he's present in so many ways. It's like he explains in Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 7, text number 8. Rasoham mapsukantiya prabhashmi shashashuryo pranavasara vedeshu shabduke parashamnushu. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of the water. I am the light of the sun and the moon. I am the sound in the ether. I am the syllable om in the Vedic mantras. I'm the ability in man. So we can learn how to connect with Krishna in every way. Just like when you go to the office. Do you ever drink water at the office? Of course. So there's your Krishna consciousness right there. Every time you go in your office, you drink a drink of water, you can just remember, Raso Hum Mapsukunteya. This is Krishna. This very nice, refreshing, water, very nice. This is Krishna. So the whole science is to arrange your life, arrange your day, arrange your house, arrange your weekly activities, arrange everything in such a way that you can remember Krishna at every minute. Your car, your bedroom, your living room, your kitchen, your cubicle at work, if you have a cubicle, or your executive office, if you have an executive office. Whatever you have, engage it in Krishna consciousness. So you always remember why you're doing this. I'm raising this family so that they can become liberated from birth and death. You see. I'm going to work at the office to make money, support my household for a Krishna conscious ashram atmosphere in the home. So that I become delivered, my wife becomes delivered, my kid, the whole family can go back to God. You see. So in this way, if you focus your mind on the goal, the ultimate goal, don't make your goal simply on the bodily platform. If you do, you're throwing your life away, sir. Don't make your life simply on the bodily platform to serve your senses. These senses are going to let you down. They'll fail. All the senses will completely lose their power at the time of death. His body will just be useless, but it's suitable for the cremation fire, that's all. So don't just spend all your energy for your body and your wife's body and your kids' bodies. That's stupidity. It's pathetic. You're doing a greatest disservice. Even if you give them all material facility, can they be happy? If they have no connection with God, can they really be happy? No. Material opulence never made anybody happy. That's a fact. Material opulence never made anybody happy in the history of the universe. Because we're not these bodies. What makes somebody happy is when they can be connected with God. That's when they become happy. So try to understand your duty as a human being is to revive your lost God consciousness according to the teachings of the Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the perfect guidebook that tells you everything you need to know about becoming an enlightened being, about becoming delivered from karma chakra. Everything is here in the Gita. You don't have time to read so many Vedic literature. Just study the Bhagavad Gita. This book alone will liberate you. if you follow it very carefully. So were they informed to write questions down? Anybody write any questions down on paper? If you have, pass them forward. Okay, good. If you haven't done it yet, you can write your questions down on a piece of paper. Can you kindly speak about Srila Prabhupada and the Ritvik system? Well, we have talked about disciplic succession today, so this is a relevant question for today's subject matter. When Prabhupada was ordered by his spiritual master to become a spiritual master. You cannot become a guru on your own. You have to be surrendered to a bona fide spiritual master and be ordered by him to act as guru. You cannot be a self-made guru. Prabhupada was the sole initiating guru for our society during the time when he was on this planet. None of us initiated disciples, only Prabhupada initiated disciples. We were all his disciples. Any devotees he would make, we'd take them all to Prabhupada and he would initiate them. No one even thought that I would like. Actually, sometimes devotees did think that way, and Prabhupada chastised them. I'd like to initiate some disciples. Prabhupada really got on Chudananda Swami's case one time. He was thinking he might initiate some disciples, even when Prabhupada is present. But when the spiritual master leaves, it is the duty, Prabhupada informed us, he gave us the order actually, that after he departs, that his disciples who are strictly following him should become spiritual masters and initiate their own disciples as his grand disciples. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in the beginning, he did everything regarding initiation. He trained us how to practice Krishna consciousness personally in the very beginning. At the ceremony, he would chant on the beads. He would give the name. He would perform the yajna. He did everything. But then, as the movement grew, Prabhupada gradually handed over more and more of the aspects of initiation to his disciples. He would let the sannyasi do the yajna. You see, that was the first thing. He wouldn't do the yajna. The sannyasi would perform the fire yajna. And then later on, Prabhupada would have the sannyasis chant on the beads. And even later on, they would pick the names. And then at the very last year, when Prabhupada was sick on his deathbed, he was on the verge of leaving his body, he made an instruction in July of 1977 in one letter. He didn't write it, but his disciple wrote it, and he signed it, authorized it, that 11 of his disciples would perform all the aspects of initiation, and they would choose who's ready. They would give the name. They would chant on the beads, and they say, and that's it. They would initiate, and then those persons would become Prabhupada's disciple. This is why Prabhupada is still on the planet. So they acted as, if, sometimes it's called as Ritviks. Prabhupada didn't use that term, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj used that term, and Prabhupada accepted that term. So they were acting as officiating priests for Prabhupada's function of initiating more disciples when he was sick and indisposed. But Prabhupada had also given that same year an instruction in May that after he departs, the devotees, the new devotees that come, they become disciples of his disciples. So what we have here is two instructions. One is for after Prabhupada's departure, the new devotees will be disciples of his disciples. And another instruction in July on what to do in the final time of Prabhupada's on the planet. You see, through the 11 Ritviks, they would do all. They would choose who's candidate, who's qualified. They would pick the name, chant the beads, everything. They'd be Prabhupada's disciple. Prabhupada then, on October 18th, just days before his departure, said, because he was still initiating disciples through these 11 Ritviks, these 11 representatives. He was still initiating disciples through them. But on October 18th, just days before he departed in November, he was very, very sick now. I mean, it's just really, it was the end. He said, in this condition, I'm no longer initiated. And he instructed one of his disciples, somebody wanted to become initiated, He instructed his own disciple, initiate that man as your disciple. So Prabhupada instituted the system, even while he was here, of the new devotees becoming disciples of his disciples. Of course, he didn't do that because we were all just taking care of Prabhupada. Our whole focus was to try to save him. So there was no question of initiating someone when Prabhupada was here. But Prabhupada gave the order to one of his disciples. Now you should initiate this man as your disciple. So when Prabhupada left, then we followed his order. And those devotees who are strictly following, they have Prabhupada's order to initiate disciples, and they're doing that. We have about maybe 80 or 90 spiritual masters now in our society initiating disciples to connect them with this wonderful sampradaya of Prabhupada. So there are some people who are envious of ISKCON, they're just envious. And they say, oh, that's the system of 11 Rijiks is supposed to be still going on now. And all the ISKCON gurus are just bogus because Prabhupada... And that this is a concocted theory called Rijik philosophy now. They denigrate the ISKCON gurus as being puffed up, greedy, materialistically minded people. And they say that everybody should just become Prabhupada's disciples. Because that's what Prabhupada wanted. But Prabhupada didn't say that. Prabhupada said on October 18th, I'm not initiating anybody else. This is it. I'm stopping my accepting disciples now. So Prabhupada said he's stopping the accepting of disciples. How you can say that you're a disciple? When he said, actually, I have one godbrother who's promoting this Vritic philosophy. He told one lady he was cultivating, he said, go to Vrindavan, take your bead bag and touch it to Prabhupada's samadhi, and then you become initiated as Prabhupada's disciple. Can you imagine? You just go to Vrindavan, touch your bead bag to Prabhupada's samadhi, now you're initiated by Prabhupada. I mean, it's just a ridiculous thing. I wonder how she got her spiritual name. This is ridiculous. This is going on. It's completely against Prabhupada's instruction. They're just envious, that's all. They don't want to follow the leadership that Prabhupada gave for the society. And they've invented this philosophy to justify not following the leadership that Prabhupada gave us. So, I think it's a pretty good explanation. Next question. When we hear Bhagavad Gita from you, we feel love in our heart for reading it and understanding it. How do we read and understand the Gita in the right way and go deeper and deeper in its purports without losing interest in some time? The key is this. Prabhupada personally wrote me this letter. It's a wonderful instruction I got personally from Prabhupada. He said, because at that time I really wanted to study, and there was I didn't think there was enough time. I wrote to Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, I want more time to study. I complained to Prabhupada, being a bold young brahmachari. I complained, I'm not getting enough time to read, Prabhupada. The leaders aren't giving me enough time to study. I was complaining to Prabhupada, Prabhupada actually kind of chastised me, corrected me. He said, actually, there's much time in the day for studying. But then he pointed out to me, he said, simply studying without practice after some time will become dry and useless. So if you don't want to do service under the direction of the leaders and you just want to study, then your study will be useless, Prabhupada was telling me. It's useless study. So the key is this. If you want to really dive into the meaning and go deeper and deeper into Bhagavad Gita Ras, you have to live it. You can't just study it. You have to live it. Krishna says accept a guru. You have to accept a guru. Krishna says only eat prasadam. You have to only eat prasadam. You have to follow the instructions of Krishna. And by doing that, you'll enter in, you'll be living in the pages of Bhagavad Gita. When you're not studying it, you'll still be thinking Bhagavad Gita. You will see the whole world through the corrective lenses of Bhagavad Gita. The key is, take the instructions, follow them, read it as much as possible, and apply it at every minute, as much as best as you possibly can, and understand you're not going to be perfect in the beginning. A little kid learning how to walk, does he make it on his first step?
No.
So we're all little kids spiritually. Do whatever you can, make the endeavor to follow these teachings. Take help from older devotees, take help from guru. And this way, they'll train you how to practice it properly. You see, how to understand it properly, how to practice it properly. And in this way, you will enter more and more into that spirit where you're always enlivened to think about the Gita, to talk about the Gita, to practice the Gita. Okay, next. Can you please teach us the prayer you sung after reading the purport? Well, it's... You can, for that, look in the Bhagavad Gita. It's on page 1. The easy page number to remember. Go to page 1 of the Gita, and it's right there. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata. You can read that and learn it. To teach you all to memorize it, I don't think you could memorize it right now in 5 minutes. If we spent maybe 3... That's something you need to do on your own. You can learn the prayer, and the translation is there. How to control anger. You have to see that actually the merciful hand of Krishna is acting in every situation. If some unpleasant situation happens to you, should you get angry? No. Because you're simply burning off the reactions for past sinful activities. You should be grateful. When something happens you don't like, that it's purifying you. You see. So don't get angry. Always be grateful. You have to have an attitude of gratitude. Somebody abused me? Well, they were just the DHL man for my karma, that's all. It wasn't them. It was my own karma, and they were the delivery man for my karma, that's all. It's not that they abused me. I'm just getting the reaction from... Of course, that doesn't justify, you know, criminal activities and these things. We do curb those problems. But in terms of our own spiritual understanding, we should not hold grudges. We have to understand, I'm simply getting what I deserve. Why is Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he's the source of everything. Everything that exists is nothing but his emanated energy. So naturally, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is the actual meaning of that word? It is the English translation of the word Bhagavan. He who possesses all opulences. What are the opulences? These are described by the great sage Parashara Muni. What are these 6 opulences? Power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. These are the 6 opulences. So, if you find that person who possesses more power, more beauty, more renunciation, more knowledge, more wealth, and more fame than anybody else, then you've arrived at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you can show me somebody that has more power than Krishna, more beauty than Krishna, more renunciation than Krishna, more knowledge, more wealth, and more fame than Krishna, then we'll tell Krishna that you're not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we got somebody else now we're going to bow down to. You can go on pilgrimage now or whatever. But you're not going to find anybody, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the possessor of all opulences. He has no competitors. Pandraka tried to compete. He met his fate.
Probably there was one more question there.
Oh, another question on there?
I think so. I could be wrong.
Oh, okay. What is in store for 2012 by Krishna? Well, it's 2012 right now, isn't it? Did the world come to an end? No. Everybody in the year 2000, they said also the whole civilization was going to collapse in the year 2000. Now they're saying in 2012 it's going to collapse again. Actually, that's bogus nonsense. What's in store for us in 2012 is more Krishna consciousness. Those who are on this pathway of Krishna bhakti, 2012 is going to be the best year of their whole life. The very best year they ever had. And for those who are not Krishna conscious, I can tell you right now the world is going down the tubes, down the drain. World civilization is going down the drain. More and more chaos, more and more disruption, more and more cruelty, all the negative things are increasing for those who are not Krishna conscious. So you decide which kind of 2012 you would like. An ever-increasingly more blissful 2012 or an ever more miserable 2012. You see, you have your choice. You can make 2012 what you want it to be. You see, if you want to have ever-increasing bliss and happiness, then practice Krishna consciousness, and your 2012 will be absolutely sublime. So it's your choice. You make. Krishna is giving you the choice. He says, I have two versions of 2012. One is the material energy, the other is the spiritual energy. You can be a part of whichever one you want to be. The spiritual 2012 or the material 2012. Your choice. Is there any chance to go back to Godhead for them who follow... Who's this? Riti? Riti Krishna? What is it?
Ritvikism.
Well, the Ritvik people that I have in my e-course, I encounter many people. Sometimes people who all they heard was Ritvik philosophy to begin with, I convince them it's wrong, and they come to ISKCON and they give up the Ritvik philosophy. Somebody who means this Ritvik philosophy is a deviation from Siddhanta or the Vaishnava conclusion. It's a bogus philosophy. So somebody who adheres to something that's not true actually will not be able to go back to Godhead. They won't be able to. They're committing offenses against those devotees who are spreading Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. So they won't be able to go back to Godhead because of aparad against devotees. What is the most important thing for a person to come to Krishna consciousness? Hearing. You have to be willing to hear. That's the most important thing. What is the first step a person can take? Well, Rupa Goswami very clearly says, what is the first step? Adau Gadashvayam. Your first step is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. That's Rupa Goswami's instruction. Okay? How can a person have more patience? If you understand that everything is going on by the sublime plan of Krishna, and you have complete faith and trust in that, then you can be patient. You have to, if you trust Krishna, then you'll be able to be patient. Okay, our questions have run out. Looks like that's it. I'll give you a minute if you have a question more to pass up. Okay, we'll stop here. And we really very much appreciate to see how you all are practicing Krishna consciousness here. This is so wonderful thing. We want to actually deliver you from the cycle of birth and death. That is our mission in ISKCON. We want that you should become delivered from the cycle of birth and death. It's not that we're interested in adding people to our organization. We don't care about such mundane conceptions. Our interest is to save you from the cycle of birth and death. That's all. That's our desire. We want to save you from the repetition of birth and death. And I see that many of you are taking it seriously. I see people with tilak on. I see neck beads out there. I see japa bags. I see you, people are listening nicely. You're asking nice questions. So you're on the right track. Stay on this pathway. Take it up seriously. Accept a spiritual master. And, in this way, your pathway back to Godhead will become successful. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
His grace Sri Man Shankar Darsan Adhikari ji ki
jai.
Her grace Vishnu Priya Mata ji ki
jai.